Hey, before your Q3 call, I've got the campaign brief ready, built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Great. Did you include the differentiation angle the CMO asked for?
Already in there. Three angles no competitor's using right now. Just need your approval.
Approved. Thanks. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass. It's a Thursday edition of The Killer Bees. Busy show, Keith Law. One of Houston's favorite people is going to be joining us in the 5 o'clock hour. I can't wait to talk to Keith Law. I've been waiting to talk to Keith Law for a long time because everything that Keith Law said, he was hated for. But boy, was he right, at least about one thing, maybe the other.
Is that the Hunter Brown thing?
That's not the one thing. Okay. There's something else. You have to make sure you're tuning in at 5:15.
Right, I didn't want to blow the tease, but I'm trying to remember because he's had a few.
Yeah, he's had. There's two in particular. Hunter Brown was definitely one of them. But there's another thing, too, that I cannot wait to talk to Keith Law about at 5:15. Cody Davis will be joining us at 4 o'clock. Texans veterans minicamp finishing up yesterday. Plenty of Texas stuff. We'll talk plenty of Texas stuff. We'll get to some Astros stuff, too, and Rocket stuff. Astros off day today. They were done by the time we were basically on the air yesterday because they were ready to get out of Minute Maid Park. They played a 2-hour, 10-minute game yesterday. Saw 93 pitches. But, you know, the whole Jose Abreu thing, what does that look like now after 8 games back? And then, you know, the whole pitching thing. Because some people are trying to blame the Houston Astros for some of their pitching troubles, which is a bit of a reach. But also, like, how do you build a roster nowadays with the fact that all of these starting pitchers are getting hurt? We'll talk about that, but Houston Texans, we'll begin with that. Before we do, though, I guess I've been a bit of a critic when it comes to parking it at our workplace. We park on the second level. I probably shouldn't have said that in case anybody wanted to come key our cars or trucks or things like that.
Or worse these days.
There is that. Yeah, you're right. Brian has been a notoriously poor parker. It has happened twice within the last 30 days or so. His parking in May was abysmal. His parking in May was about as good as Jose Abreu's batting average in May. But there is another terrible parking spot that I've noticed for about the last week. And this isn't you, Brian, but it is representative, I don't know if that's a word, of us as a radio station. Our company van, SUV, is about 6 inches to a foot beyond where you need to be between the lines. Like, its butt on the SUV is sticking out. And what makes this, like, it has another foot to go forward. And what makes this worse is that it's right at the ramp. So when you're coming up the ramp, you have to kind of, like, beeline out of the way. When you're going to go down the ramp, you have to, like, move to the side of the vehicle. And the problem is, it's two ways.
Someone must have moved it. It used to be right in the middle of that far row, but it was still parked like that.
It has a good foot to move forward. And the fact that it has its rear sticking out by a foot could really cause some serious trouble because it's a two-way ramp. You're trying to avoid it. All of a sudden, you got a little bit of a head-on collision. Whoever has the keys to that ESPN vehicle needs to go downstairs and move that SUV forward a foot. I'm preventing a lawsuit is what I'm doing.
It's worth notating that thing does get bounced around a lot. It used to be borrowed quite a bit, sometimes without asking, and would disappear for days and then reappear in a different spot. But yeah, I think that based on the fact that we give the keys just about anybody, I don't know that you could even pin on who did it.
I'll do it. I'll go move the darn SUV. That's how strongly I feel about it. I'll run down there during the break and just move it forward by a foot. It's sticking out a foot into where traffic's going to be moving around. It's unbelievable to me. I just don't like it. You would be able to get away with it if it wasn't a high-trafficked area. You know what I mean? Because it's by the ramp, it's a very trafficked area. If it was like in the middle of the second floor away from everybody, wouldn't matter.
Am I missing something or misremembering Roger Clemens style? Did that ramp used to be just one way?
I don't think so.
And then you entered on the backside, and then they changed, or there was construction, and then they made it a two-way?
I feel like it's always been two-way.
It's pretty wicked when you're coming down and you don't realize someone could turn and come up that ramp, and it's pretty tight.
Yeah, that's the issue here. Like, is because it's two-way and you're trying to get around the vehicle, all of a sudden, boom, head-on collision. So somebody needs to go move that son of a gun. It's embarrassing to us as a radio station. All right, what is your top worry when it comes to the Houston Texans? Houston Texans finishing up minicamp, still a long way to go to training camp. They're going to go to the summer break. What is your top worry with Texans training camp or Texans Houston roster?
I ain't worried about nothing in Houston.
Okay, that was Lewis Riddick. Lewis Riddick's not worried about nothing in Houston. He's not worried about nothing. And maybe you don't have any worry. Maybe you're worried about nothing when it comes to the Houston Texans. But what is your top Texan worry? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blankers, what is your top Texan worry?
Yeah, my top Texan worry is the left guard position of the offensive line. The fact that Kenyon Green, and I don't care how many times you have multiple different people that are connected and following the team tell me he's bigger, stronger, he looks better, he changed his number, he changed his diet, he changed his workout program. Well, he better change his playing style, and I've got to see that, and I've got to see it through training camp against real live competition with full pads on, and I got to see it so that I believe that he is capable of holding down the position they drafted him for, because the rest of the offense, as we've talked about, seems to be pretty locked up, and it seems to be a really good unit that looks like there's got a lot of impressive pieces and a ton of potential. It could all go drastically wrong if that left guard position isn't sewn up by a guy that can hold his own, and for me, that's where it starts.
Yeah, Kenyon Green is a topic of bitterness for me because I'm super bitter that was the one pick that Kasarius Green, and Kasarius did a good job. Like, I'm very nitpicky when it comes here. I just really wish Kyle Hamilton was in D'Amico Ryan's defense. That is very attractive to me. That said, I'm not really worried about the offensive line. Like, the offensive line to me is in a much better – now, you know, you have to avoid injuries, but the offensive line is in a much better spot, I think, this year than it was at almost every single point last year. You were searching for left guard even before you kicked. Like, Kendrick Green started a few games in the interior of the offensive line. Jarrett Patterson was a six-rounder, started a bunch of games in the interior of the offensive line. Juice Scruggs was hurt for like the first month and a half, comes back and immediately in the starting lineup. You had some injuries with Titus. You had some injuries with Laramie. You had Titus playing left guard, et cetera, et cetera. And look, I mean, injury is always a part of this, and you have to move pieces around. I'm actually pretty good with where the offensive line is at. Now, is left guard the biggest hole or question in that offensive line? Yes, 100%. No argument there. The bookends you feel pretty good about with Tunsil and Howard. You could think that they're, you know, maybe some think that one of them or both of them are overrated, but you still feel pretty comfortable with that. Shaq Mason, solid right guard. You think Juice Scruggs going to slide over at center, a more natural position. He held his own at left guard. He's better at center. You think he's going to hold his own there. And then you have some depth. Like, you drafted Fisher in the second. Jarrett Patterson started a bunch of games last year. So I'm okay with where the offensive line is at. Yes, Kenyon Green in the left guard spot is the biggest question there. Running back, you could talk about the depth here a little bit, but if your running backs stink and you're not getting any running attack, well, cool. You got the arsenal and the weapons to throw it 40 times a game. Not that you want to do that, but you're capable of doing that. For me, it's the secondary. It's the secondary for me. Like, what are you expecting from a rookie in Kamari Lassiter? I think you have some questions at the nickel spot if Lassiter starts outside. I think you have some questions outside if Lassiter starts inside. And then the safeties. You know, Jalen Petrie was not good last year. We're hopeful and optimistic he'll be good in year two in D'Amico's scheme. Jimmy Ward was banged up. Do you get healthier when you get older? Usually not, and he's getting older. And yes, you drafted a guy, but it was a third-round draft pick who had issues tackling in college. And again, how much are you expecting from a rookie? So the second, if I had to pick one, and I think the secondary is going to be okay-ish with a chance to be good. Like, if all those things check off, like Petrie's good, Lassiter wins a starting spot, et cetera, Stingley stays healthy, I think they have the potential to be a good secondary. But talking right now, June 6th, I would point to the secondary more than anything else.
Yeah, if I was doing top three, those running back in the secondary, and I like the fact that we can lump it all together and just call it the secondary, because I think all eyes are first and foremost going to be on that opposite corner of Stingley. And then you have to address the safety position because Jimmy Ward could not stay healthy. You don't know if he can get back to form. And even if he gets back to form, can he stay off the IL and can he stay off multiple stints where he didn't do you any good in sweats? Yes, Petrie was bad. And so they drafted two guys that you hope can get into the mix, and it remains to be seen how quickly. But, of course, everybody is already singing the praises of Lassiter at corner. I guess that's a really good thing. Again, but it goes back to what I said about Kenyon Green. I got to see a guy in full pads playing against guys running the full offense at full speed. And even still, I got to see him perform during training camp and preseason games to figure out this guy can play in week one on the outside because of what we've talked about with his speed already. There are a lot of those are the big three for me in terms of question marks. Running back, I think, could be right there as one of the premier positions to have to do something with, because as we talked about yesterday, I really firmly believe that number two running back on this team is not on this team currently. It's not on the roster. He's not on the roster. I think that they'll be looking at camps. They'll be looking at cutdowns. They'll look at salary casualties. But I think it's going to be an important position because Slowik has maintained that they want to run the football. DeMeco has said that. And I think that that's going to be something that's a position that's still incomplete. I think from the secondary perspective, it's complete. I think they've got everybody that they're going to consider in the running for either any of these positions. It's really going to be a camp battle to figure out who settles into what positions and how they plan to play. And I'm interested if one or more of the rookies is going to find playing time.
0303 says, I'm worried about the punter. That's a weird worry. I don't know why you'd be worried about the punter. Maybe
they're not
going to
punt.
Yeah, they're not going to punt. Tommy Townsend's going to be sitting there resting his leg the entire game. Tommy Townsend's fine. I mean, I don't know why there's worry of Tommy Townsend. Maybe it's a joke and it just went over my head. 9997, my only concern is a sophomore slump for CJ. Now, other teams have more tape on him. Like, if all the things you could have concern about, CJ's probably pretty far down my list. Might be last on my list, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're going to talk about proven players on this squad that you have concerns with, I would start with the fact that Joe Mixon is not exactly a spring chicken. And you and I have had conversations about what we think he might have left in the tank. And I think that we're all banking on him to be RB1, and he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to be, you know, somewhat effective and be close to, I don't say he has to be the player he was, but they're expecting him to be pretty close to it. And if he's not, and or if there's any injuries, that brings in that whole RB2 situation again. And that's, I think you're looking at a guy like Diggs who's trying to get a contract. You're looking at a guy like Mixon who has to prove he's still got it. If you're going to stay with, like, veteran players, those are the two I'm looking at.
It's weird to me. Like, a thought just, you know, came to my mind, but I'm kind of second-guessing it. Like, I wonder how much the Houston Texans value the running back position. Like, Joe Mixon, you go out and get him, but you traded a seventh rounder for him. You traded more for Ben Skowronek than you did Joe Mixon. Damian Pierce is, like, currently penciled into the number two spot. Wasn't good last year. Dari's more of a special teams guy. You re-sign him. Jawar Jordan's a guy that you drafted in the sixth round. Rewind to Damian Pierce. He was a guy you drafted in the fourth round. Like, you haven't spent a whole lot of capital, draft capital, financial capital, although you did re-sign Mixon, on, like, running. But he's not at, like, a top five salary, anything like that. So, like, they haven't spent a whole lot of capital on running back. But then the pushback that I have to myself is I talk to myself with the voices in my head. They did aggressively attack Saquon Barkley. So, like, on one hand, like, the actions that they've actually accomplished, they haven't spent a whole lot of capital at running back, but things that they were close on, or at least a thing that they were close on, was Saquon Barkley in free agency.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they care about running back or they don't care about running back, because you can kind of argue both sides of it.
Yeah, and when you heard the quotes from both Slowik and from DeMeco in the past, they said they want to be a running football team. They want to run the football. Well, that's why I think that they do believe that they have to run the football and they want to run the football.
But maybe they think they can do that with the offensive line. But there's a certain level of talent, like a Saquon Barkley, where he can elevate the running game. Where, like, they kind of view, like, a bunch of running backs as just, like, you know, a guy, and that the offensive line could, you know, just propel them to this really good rushing attack, unless it's, like, one of the top 7 to 10 running backs in the league that can even take it up another level.
It's possible you can do running back by committee. It's possible that you can do it a different way, you know, a different way, because you do have a lot of substantial pieces on the offensive line. But to me, that means that, in my mind, Pierce isn't going to be your second running back. And I don't care, you know, what they did in the draft. I think that the way this team is constructed, they're looking for another veteran running back that's capable of running the football behind an offensive line like that in the NFL for a team that's chasing, you know, pretty big aspirations.
Not to dismiss what you said, but why haven't they done it yet?
Because I think they want to see, I think they really want to see what who Joe Mixon is, and then how aggressive they have to be in trying to find another running back. I think that if Joe Mixon shows them in camp that he looks spry and quick and you know, and he looks like he's in good shape, I think that they're probably just going to look for a guy that is capable of backing him up a game here, a game there, or for carries. I think that if Joe Mixon looks like he's a little washed or a little slow, that they'll probably be a little bit more aggressive going, hey, we've got to figure out another guy with some NFL experience that we can throw into the mix here that can kind of help us carry the load, literally.
713-780-ESPN. What is your worry about the Texans as they go into summer camp? We're still pretty far away from training camp. We'll talk to Cody Davis at 4 o'clock. We'll talk to Keith Law at 5:15. People are already tweeting at me. Keith Law, notorious Astro hater. So you're going to want to tune into that conversation. Also, a hot take from veteran minicamp. I love me some hot takes. All of that when we come back. It's the Killer Bees, 713-780-ESPN. The HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel on the Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Beast on ESPN 97.5, ESPN
92.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
0367, if Houston's following San Francisco's model, they would be fine, and they're looking for their special McCaffrey. That's kind of the point. Like, they feel like their offensive scheme with a good offensive line can make a sound running attack. But for them to spend actual capital on a good running back, they feel like he has to take it to another level, and there's like 5% of guys that they can do that. Saquon would be in that mold. Christian McCaffrey would be in that mold, but like Devin Singletary would not. Some of these other free agents that were out there, they don't want to overspend, so they're out on that. They would only go for that, you know, upper echelon guy if he's a premier back. That's a good way to phrase it. Where like San Francisco in the Shanahan scheme, like you go back to his dad, they were getting 1,000-yard rushers from guys who were undrafted free agents. It was scheme, it was offensive line, zone blocking scheme.
TD made the Hall of Fame as an undrafted running back behind that line.
And I mean, the best running back in Texans history is Arian Foster, undrafted free agent in the zone blocking scheme. Kubiak came as a guy that was very much with like Shanahan's tree and had a lot of the same offensive principles that Shanahan had. And it's the same thing with San Francisco. Like San Francisco never had a dude at running back. Now, They had guys that put up numbers. They never had a dude at running back until all of a sudden they make the trade for Christian McCaffrey because he's a guy that can take that running attack to another level. Elite. Or just, somebody who's a value, whether it's undrafted free agent, late draft pick, somebody who can get for relatively cheap. I think that that's their mindset with the running back
position. Well, and you think about it now, too. Look at another kind of a guy under the same mold, same tree, but McDaniel in Miami does the same thing with two running backs. Now, they did use draft capital to get both, to get one guy. But
even Achane was like a third rounder.
Yeah, and to take those two guys and to use them the same way, it fits the system. They can get results out of both guys. If one guy goes down, you still got a guy that you can rely on and you can move other pieces into that puzzle. And it does make some sense that if they were willing to take the splash, it was only going to be for one of those premier type running backs. And if not, the system can work. I mean, look, Devin Singletary wasn't exactly running the football down the throat of defenses when he was at Buffalo, and he excelled here to the point of you have the right offensive lineman and you block correctly, you can get yards in the running game with lesser than premier running backs.
Yeah, I think that's what their mindset is, because they went from shopping for Saquon Barkley and being close and maybe the runner up for Saquon Barkley to don't do anything, let all these other running backs sign elsewhere, and then when Cincinnati says that they're going to release Joe Mixon, they trade a seventh rounder for Joe Mixon.
I just don't even know how much I buy the idea that they want to be like this running team. I don't think you go out and invest what you did to get Stephon Diggs to, quote, be a team that runs the ball a lot. You have Joe Mixon, who's going to be 28 when training camp starts. Your second running back right now with Damien Pierce is a guy that doesn't fit the system. I mean, and their 10 wins last year plus the playoff claim, how many would you attribute to, oh, they won it because they ran well? Certainly the Cincinnati game when Singletary ran for 150 yards. But with these three wide receivers, with C.J. Stroud, I don't think they really – I think it's mostly lip service when you hear guys like D'Amico say, we want to be a running team who establishes it. I mean, maybe there's some truth to that he'd like to be that in a perfect situation because he is a defensive guy, but their personnel doesn't say we're a run team.
Yeah, see, I think you hit on the thing with D'Amico, though. Like, D'Amico being a defensive, physical-minded head coach, he wants to have the ability to run. And to Slowick's point, like you mentioned all the receivers, but even you can even make the argument that all the receivers in the passing game is going to open up the running game. Mm-hmm. And if that, like, all of a sudden, and you always hear these coaches say they have a light, like, defense has a light box, they have five guys in the box, you have six guys to block five. That's
kind of like
you're
the Mike
the football.
Leach system.
Yeah.
Spread them out and then run it up the middle.
And why do they have success running there? It's not so much because they have this great running back, it's because they have a light box, because the defense is focused on the receivers, and you have an offensive line that can move the defensive line or the linebackers whenever you have the plus one advantage. So that's where I'm at, I think. Like, they're willing to, if there's an elite running back, top 5%, that can take the running game to another echelon, to another level, then okay, let's go get that guy. But if that guy's not out there, then we're going to win in the running game because of our offensive line, because who we have on the outside is going to draw so much attention from the defense that they're going to have a light box, we're going to have the numbers advantage, and we're going to win in the running game that way. And I think it's where they're at, because they went Saquon Barkley, okay, we missed out on that, to trading a seventh rounder for Joe Mixon after he was going to be released, and then drafting a guy in the sixth round. Like, they didn't spend much resource at running back.
And I think that most offensive coordinators and head coaches, they want balance. They want balance. And to the point you're making, the other thing is that through the balance, if you can also keep the defense guessing, because you are capable of getting chunk yards and good quality runs from your running game, it just makes, as a coordinator, it makes play calling a hell of a lot easier. Sure. Because now, if you do, as you said, and spread out with the offensive weapons that you have, and they start getting yards, now the defensive coordinator has to adjust. Now they have to play more focus on the box. Now your receivers probably have more chances to get open, create space, less defensive guys in the mix, and you can get chunk yards that way as well. Now the defensive coordinator's guessing, and you're rolling, and that's how you can systematically. So that's why I think a lot of coaches, no matter how much they want to stress the passing game, and they won't admit that publicly, that's why they always want that balance.
Yeah, the balance is important. And, like, keeping the defense and the defensive coordinator, you know, kind of on their toes, or on their heels, rather, like, that is a factor. 0367, counter to Brian's point, you need a successful run game for play action, zone blocking scheme, you really want a good play action. Like, to me, it's more about the defensive mismatches that you're trying to create. And if they're going to spend all their attention, like, let's slow down the passing game, all of a sudden you have the ability to attack. And Bobby Slowick talked about this the other day when he talked after one of their practices or whatever. He said, we feel like we have the ability to win in any style. Well, how do they feel like they have the ability to win with the running game? Well, because you have to spend all of this attention on our elite wide receivers, that now we feel like there's going to be room to run in the middle. Now, you know, and then if you're torching them and you're gashing them, and all of a sudden they have to adjust, and then you feel like you have the pieces to now beat them in the passing game. And this is just the chess match between offense and defense. Now, okay, if they would have acquired Saquon Barkley, because they were trying to acquire Saquon Barkley, do you still think that they'd go after Diggs?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't think so. I think that, again, depending on, and because of the money that it was going to take as well, I think as they were clearing more space, and they were doing the things they were doing, I think it was a one or the other deal. And I think that they firmly believe that a healthy Tank and Nico and whoever that they're going to have, and they could still have added a third. We talked about the fact that there were guys out there that could be good third receivers, that your receiver room would have been just fine. And then the huge upgrade at running back would have done exactly what we were just talking about in terms of making defensive coordinators squirm, because now you can't just say, oh, they're a passing team or they're a running team. Now they got elite guys at the running back and above average to elite type young guys on the outside and a really good tight end. There's so many different ways to get to the same end result. And I think that if they got Barkley, I don't think Diggs would have been in their plans.
I tend to agree. The finances, you probably could have fit him in, because you're still $19.8 million in the black. You still have $19.8 million in cap space. Now, some of that you want to use operating budget for the year, et cetera, et cetera. I think you could have fit Saquon Barkley into the, you know, salary cap, even if you were to acquire Diggs later on. And, like, acquiring Saquon wouldn't have taken the draft capital, et cetera, et cetera. So I still think it's plausible. I tend to agree with you, though, that it's unlikely. So it goes – so now I like to go all the way back to the beginning of the offseason for the Houston Texans. What was their plan? It seems like their plan was to add one offensive weapon to this team. Mm-hmm. And if you give them a running back, it's like, okay, well, now you get some attention towards Saquon Barkley. It opens some things up for your receivers, for Dalton Schultz. Darn, we missed out there because we had our line in the sand. We weren't willing to spend over X amount of money. So now let's pivot. And their pivot was, let's acquire a serviceable running back. We're not going to draft one in the first five rounds, but we'll draft a young guy. Maybe he has a flyer. Maybe he has a chance. But then you trade for Stephon Diggs. Why? Because it opens up some things in the offensive attack, and it makes defenses worry about other things. So Casario, and I like this about Casario, as we kind of break this whole thing down. Casario goes into the offseason saying, let's give our offense one more weapon. And it didn't matter how it comes. It's like we feel confident in our offensive coordinator, in our scheme, and the way that we're doing things, that it doesn't matter what position that offensive weapon's at, because we have the trust in our coordinator to go out there and figure out the best thing for this offense. And I admire that, because I hate the whole, like, this is the way we're going to do business. You have to adjust, especially in a salary cap league where everybody's going to be, like, leaving in free agency. So you have to have the ability to adapt. So I like that Casario isn't trying to force round, you know, peg, square hole, blah, 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 blah. And that he's giving his offensive coordinator, who he trusts, a weapon, doesn't matter what position, and then lets him go figure it out.
This is the broader way of thinking in being a forward-thinking general manager these days. It's when you go to that whiteboard and you're not just, you know, like we talk about with the draft, and you're doing the pros and the cons and the different guys at each position you can look at. I think when you go into the offseason, you can also start planning out, hey, guys that may be available via trade or that we know are going to be either on the market or and or out with their team. And then they're going to look at free agency. And I think that plan A was probably Saquon Barkley. And plan B or C or somewhere in their list of other options, if Barkley doesn't come through, are Diggs. And they probably had some other guys too. But it was adding one more premier piece. And I think that as long as they were able to add that one premier piece, that's kind of that can be the difference between being able to keep a defense like Baltimore or some of the top defenses they faced a little bit more off balance, and you having a lot more effectiveness in terms of putting drives together, getting points on the board. And it didn't, like you said, it didn't matter if it was a running back or a wide receiver, maybe even a tight end. They would look at just another weapon at a premier level that could change the landscape of what they're capable of doing with Slowick.
713-780-ESPN. It is now a crowded wide receiver room, though, because you did add Diggs. You already had a good wide receiver room. Here's how I would handle the Texans' crowded wide receiver room going into the season. And also Tank Dell, he was on that podcast with C.J. Stroud, that Million Dollar Podcast. He had some goals. Do we think that Tank Dell can attain these lofty goals? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. The Houston Sabercats have some big goals, too. They're looking for a deep run in their league, and they're the first team in the league, too, to clinch a spot in the playoffs. They're doing well. First place Houston Sabercats, 11-1 on the year, and they have 7-1-3 night coming up at Sabercat Stadium this Saturday as they host RFC LA. Tickets are going fast. Also, those 713 tickets we've been telling you about, because it's 713 night at Sabercat Stadium, they're all gone. The 713 tickets are sold out. We've been telling you to act and to act fast. They're all gone. So it's going to be a great atmosphere at Sabercat Stadium. Tickets are still available, just not the $7.13 tickets. So get your hands on the tickets to watch the Sabercats take on LA this Saturday. Players will be wearing their new City Kit jerseys. They'll be up for auction off the back of the players once the match ends. The auction is currently live for these jerseys, HoustonSabercats.com, so you can get in on the action for those City Kit jerseys. If you haven't seen them, H-Town Blue, do I need to say more? They're beautiful. So go win one of those kits straight off the back of the Sabercat players. Houston, we mentioned 11-1 after winning this past weekend, looking for 12-1 this Saturday. First team in the league to clinch a playoff spot. Performance at halftime, performance before the game, too, by Cooper Wade. Happy hour, $5 cocktail. It's going to be a party out there Saturday night. A beer until kickoff in the Cats Den, too. Houston celebs in attendance and recognize Calvin Murphy's going to be there. Dan Pastorini's going to be there. Halftime performance and H-Town merchandise available for purchase at Sabercats Team Shop. If you don't already have your tickets, those $7.13 tickets have been sold out. But because we love you, the ESPN listener, go online, order your tickets, HoustonSabercats.com/tickets. Enter promo code ESPN20 at checkout. You're going to get 20% off of those tickets. It's good for Saturday, and it's good for all the matches through June. So HoustonSabercats.com/tickets. Enter promo code ESPN20 to receive that discount. A great party-like atmosphere, teams playing well, a great time, best value in town. Get out there. Cheer on the Sabercats as they continue to look for their first trophy in a franchise history. HoustonSabercats.com/tickets. Enter promo code ESPN20.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texans do have a crowded wide receiver room. Top three, you're not messing with the top three. You got Nico Collins, you got Tank Dell, you got Stephon Diggs. Top three, no doubt about it, those are your guys. Reports out of minicamp, John Metchie looked great. Okay, cool. You're not going to mess with John Metchie either. You drafted him in the second round a couple of years ago. He showed flashes last year. They're saying he's even better this year. John Mechie's a lock to make this team. I think Skowronek's a lock to make this team. You traded more for Skowronek than you did Joe Mixon, who's your top running back, and then Skowronek's not going to make the team? Doubtful. Skowronek's a lock to make this roster. And then the sixth and final spot is going to be up to two guys. And you're going to be surprised by these two names because there's another plan I have for another guy. Robert Woods and Xavier Hutchinson are going to be fighting for the sixth and final job. Now, if you have injuries, it makes that sixth and final job easy. Maybe you can hide Hutchinson on the practice squad. That might be difficult to do because there's some game film on him from last year where he was okay. Woods, you can save some money for, you know, cutting him, but what are you doing with those savings? Probably nothing, and he's a veteran receiver. Where do you have Noah Brown? Noah Brown's going to start the season on my pup list, and he might not be too excited about that idea, but he injured the shoulder in the playoff game. He's still recovering off of that. They say he's going to be ready by training camp, but ready with the shoulder being 100% and ready for NFL action, two different things. Plus, I'm kind of hiding Noah Brown on the pup. That way, whenever you have an injury, inevitably a month into the season, you have a veteran guy who you trust and you re-sign that is coming back to help out your receiver room. Sims and Wayne, they're on my practice squad. That's how I'm handling the Texans wide receiver room as the NFL season approaches.
Yeah, the only thing with Sims is from a return standpoint, from a special team standpoint, he may factor into the mix somehow, some way. But the intriguing guy to me is Metchie, because even when he was making a few plays here and there last year, he didn't look like the Metchie that we saw that they drafted out of Alabama. And of course, he had to deal with everything that he had to deal with battling what he went through. Now it seems like he's back to full football, and I think even he probably realized he was in a different kind of shape than he was when he was at Alabama in terms of the quickness, the speed, the things that they look for and they like. I think I'll believe it when I see it at training camp again and when he's starting to get into competitions, but we all know all the tools were there. It's the reason why they brought him in the first place in the draft. So that's when it's interesting to me. The Woods thing to me I would already been done with, but like you said, we're going to need backup. At some point, we're going to need insurance policies, which they didn't have a year ago on the offensive line. Noah Brown, to me, seems like when they re-signed him that he was going to be that guy to be that fourth receiver and be the first guy to get the first opportunity. If he's not healthy or even if he's close, I'm fine with stashing him for a while because I think it's going to sort itself out as we get into the early stages of training camp. And I think that maybe Robert Woods is the type of guy that, you know, whether there's value somewhere else, that I just don't know. I just don't see Robert Woods being one of the guys in that receiver room when we start the regular season.
I could see that too. Like maybe you get into your 2 weeks out from the NFL season. Everybody gets through healthy. Noah Brown's either like on the cusp or like, you know, as soon as like, I think it's 4 weeks on the pup to start the year. I have to double check that. But you're like, you feel good. Like all the other six guys not named Robert Woods are good. Noah Brown's going to be good the first time he's available to come off the pup. Why do you need Robert Woods? Now, I don't think Robert Woods is going to have amazing trade value, but maybe you can recoup like the sixth, seventh round pick swap that you used on Skowronek, or you traded a seventh rounder for Joe Mixon. Maybe you can recoup a seventh. Like Robert Woods isn't going to have tremendous value, but if you can get a draft pick for him and you're probably not going to have him on the roster anyways, or at best he's the number six receiver, I could see them trading him towards the end of camp, not the start of camp, because you want to get through healthy.
Yeah, and the only reason why I said trade in my mind, was, and maybe you can do what you said and try and do it for a late round pick. For me, it was more thinking along the lines of a team that's looking to dump out of a veteran running back, but maybe they have an injury pop up and they need a wide receiver, that maybe you could do some kind of a switch, a quick trade where they get a Robert Woods, a veteran receiver that can help them and they're in a position to need, and you can pick up a veteran running back that could possibly, you know, strengthen you in a position that you're still looking for, I think, at running back too.
Yeah, player swaps are very rare in the NFL that time of year, but maybe, you know, maybe that could pop up where you're kind of scratching each other's back. You're doing a favor for a team. They're doing you a favor. Like Sims to me, like he's not – like he last year he was back and forth off the practice squad and the 53. Now, I don't want Tank Dell returning kicks anymore. I'm right out on that idea. Like, let's just make Tank Dell a receiver. He doesn't need to be a punt returner. He doesn't need to be a kick returner. He doesn't need to be a fullback. Let's keep Tank Dell on the outside. Play. I mean, maybe I play some slot, but let's keep him away from the giant bodies. So I don't need him in the return game. Sims, too, like, are you keeping him over Woods? Are you keeping him over Hutchinson? Are you keeping him over Noah Brown? I think Sims is more of a practice squad type of guy. And if you have some injuries, then he's the sixth receiver. That's how he was used last year.
Yeah, no. And he had a couple of moments where he looked like he was fully capable of being a return guy for you. But look, it's a surplus room. It's a room of over gushing with talent in a lot of ways, to where there's going to be some tough decisions made. It's going to be interesting how it all plays out. I like what Hutchinson brings to the table. I think I question like his ability to catch in traffic and his hands, but he's got the size, he's got the ability. Maybe he's a guy too that ends up, you know, ready for the practice squad again. I don't know.
Yeah, he might not be on the roster. Like, he could be where, okay, let's keep the six. Or let's say that Noah Brown isn't on the PUP. Like, I think that the chances of, like, I would want him on the PUP, but will the Texans see it that way? I mean, they spent money to re-sign him. They might just bring him back and be one of the six guys that start the season in the receiver room. So now you're looking at Woods and Hutchinson both being the odd guy out if you get through healthy. I don't think that they're 100% committed to Xavier Hutchinson making the 53. I don't think they want to lose him.
Right.
But I could see him being, hey, we're going to release him. If he clears waivers, doesn't get picked up by another team, we're going to stash him on the practice squad. If they go that route, I think it's like a 50-50 shot. I think they have a 50% chance to put Hutch on the practice squad. Sixth rounder last year, showed a little bit of glimpse, but wasn't like this world beater. I think there's a coin flip chance that they could find a way to put him on the practice squad.
I think they would like to have him fall into a position where you could put him on the practice squad. I think there are teams that saw enough of him that looked like, hey, there's a guy we might be able to develop. He obviously has some skill. He's got the, you know, a skill set and the physical attributes where you could work with him, to where I think he'd probably get picked up. But that's a guy that might be a casualty just simply because of the fact, like I was talking about, there's too much talent in that room. There are going to be some tough decisions made because of the fact that you did make the move for Skronik. You do have guys that can catch the football. And Noah Brown is a guy that you re-signed, and I'm sure that they had thoughts of the fact that he's going to be a part of this puzzle. I think Robert Woods goes. I think that Hutchinson probably goes. I think that you end up with Mechie and Skronik and the starting three and Noah Brown.
Yeah, that's why I want to store Brown on the PUP. Because it might not be feasible, but I want to do that because it's in, like, even if – if Nico, Diggs, Tank, and Mechie are all healthy, Brown's probably your fifth receiver. Maybe he's your fourth over Mechie. That's the battle. But is it more important to have that fourth receiver, or is it more important to, hey, let's store you on the PUP for a month, and then if there's that injury, then all of a sudden you become one of our top three, top four guys. And if there's not, then okay, in week five, week six of the season, hey, let's see if we can slide Hutchinson to the practice squad. So I like the idea of storing PUP or storing Brown on the PUP. Might not be feasible, but I would certainly explore that option. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Here's Tank Dell. Tank Dell was on that $1 Million podcast, which I finally finished it today. It was long. It was almost like 2 hours long. And C.J. Stroud was very defensive of Aaron Rodgers. He was defending Aaron Rodgers to that host. Now, the context that we listened to, yeah, which was Mike Florio taking, you know, just a very small piece of that entire conversation, and maybe Rodgers caught some strays from C.J., because C.J. was like, yeah, it's about how you treat your teammates. That didn't sound great for Rodgers. Yeah, you got to have those rings. That didn't sound great for Rodgers. But it was more the host that sounded like Booker T. That was banging on Rodgers. It wasn't banging on Rodgers. He said Rodgers was elite, but he's not top-level elite because he lacks the rings, which I think is fair. And C.J. Stroud was actually defending Aaron Rodgers quite a bit, so Florio took that out of context. But, I mean, I can see why you did that if you take just the 30-second clip. But here was Tank Dell later in the podcast talking about his goals for the 24th season. Are these attainable for the Houston Cougar Go Cougs?
10-plus touchdowns.
Uh-huh.
I went over, like, 1,300 yards.
Uh-huh.
Which is going to be crazy because we got three of us, but we can all do it, I feel like.
There you go. So at least he's realistic that there's going to be a lot of mouths to feed. But 1,300 yards, 10 touchdowns. Last year he had just over 700 yards, 7 touchdowns, played in 11 games. Is this attainable for one Tank Dell?
No, it is not. I think he's going to rack some touchdowns again. And he's just so elusive, and his ability to find the open field and do something with the football is going to be really electric to watch in this offense. But he mentioned it. There's just so many mouths to feed and only one football to go around. And I think maybe a year from now that maybe he can have those kind of more lofty goals in terms of the yardage, depending on what happens with Diggs. And I don't expect Diggs to be here more than a year. I think for this year with those three guys like he talked about, I think that of the three guys, he's going to probably be the guy that has the lesser than in terms of the yards, but probably the most touchdowns.
Yeah, 1,300 yards, I think, is the more unrealistic of the two, although 10 touchdowns is pretty lofty as well. I think Tank Dell will have a 10-touchdown season at some point in his career. I think he'll have a 1,300-yard season at some point in his career. But to combine both in your second year, coming off 700 yards, 7 touchdowns, yes, you didn't play in 6 of those games, but you added Stephon Diggs. I believe in high. I like aspirational goals. I think it's great to have those goals because if you set your goal to be the moon and you fall short, you're still amongst the stars. I don't think he's going to get to 1,300 yards, 10 touchdowns this year, unfortunately. All right, hot take from veteran minicamp yesterday. You've seen it from a lot of different people, but also this guy is garnering the attention of his teammates, and it certainly has caught my attention. I'll tell you what it is next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Football players have been doing football things on a football field for the Texans over the last couple of days, veteran minicamp. I usually don't put a whole lot of stuff. I think some stuff does matter. We do the move the needle type of stuff from time to time, like what does matter, how much does it matter. I do think people generally overrate it. Now, something did catch my attention, though. Will Anderson, talking yesterday to the media, and look, you know, everybody's going to talk about their own teammates, and these guys are good, and you kind of over time know who's being truthful and know who, like, boy, who's crying wolf. Like, Dana Brown. Like, can you trust anything Dana Brown says?
Not really.
Not really. Like, you know, Spencer Arrighetti is going to be a rookie of the year. Oh, Christian Javier, we're not worried about his velocity. Oh, he has Tommy John in 2 weeks. I'll never trade Drew Gilbert. Kyle Tucker's going to be here for his entire career. Like, boy who cries wolf. Like, you can't take Dana Brown seriously with what he says because he's boy who cried wolf. I really don't know about Will Anderson yet. Like, I don't remember a time where Will Anderson's, like, gassing up his teammates and he was wrong. Like, I just don't know. I don't think we have enough information on Will Anderson yet. But Will Anderson talking to the media yesterday with very glowing comments about rookie Kamari Lassiter.
I've been so amazed by him, man. He's been making plays left and right all over the field. He got the sworn player of the day. He's electric, man. Another young guy that we can't wait to keep seeing grow and stuff like that. And I think he can do great things for this defense and be a part of something special that we have going on here.
Okay, that caught my attention. And, like, I don't know how much stock to give it because I don't know if Will Anderson's Dana Brown, or I don't know if I can trust Will Anderson in that he doesn't give out these compliments, you know, just routinely or very casually. I have no idea. Derek Stingley quote-tweeted Cody Stutes' Twitter the other day. He posted a video of Kamari Lassiter versus Stephon Diggs, Lassiter with a pass breakup. Derek Stingley quote-tweeted it, said, called locksmith for a reason. So, like, you have Will Anderson, caught my attention, press conference, talking up Kamari Lassiter. Derek Stingley, who maybe he's the opposite corner from Lassiter, quote tweeting, he's called a locksmith for a reason. Like, how much stock should we be putting in these players gassing up Kamari Lassiter?
To me, this is the one area where I might go off of the script that I've been given every time we've talked about this, which is I'm not getting too worked up until I see these guys in full pads and doing the things that they're supposed to do at camp and beyond. This is coming from the players themselves. This is coming from guys that are in every play, in every huddle, watching this guy on the field in the sessions that the media is not allowed in. And these are the guys that are talking about that kid. And that's what's encouraging because we've heard enough to know that, hey, it's the speed at the combine versus the speed on the field. We know how Nick has been gassing him up and he feels about it. It's also interesting, Will Anderson, who's always been, I think he's a pretty keep it real type guy. And yet I've heard him on multiple interviews. And when he's talking about Alabama guys, it's different because those were his ex-teammates and he feels a certain kind of way. You're talking about a Georgia guy. You're talking about a guy that they drafted. And Will Anderson is talking real talk about a guy that they drafted highly, performing already at a very high level. And we've had some video to back it up where if speed was a question and he's running stride for stride with Diggs and he's running down the field, he's breaking up a couple of different plays I saw against Diggs. I'm encouraged by that. That's one where when we talk about moving the needle in most of those didn't move my needle a whole lot. When you hear it from two different key members of your defense, this kid has looked good. He's been impressive. Now, that'll move the needle a little bit. That'll tell me, okay, that means he looks like he can ball a little bit.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Derek Stingley never talks. Derek Stingley, like, tweeting, talking, two different things. But, like, I don't I don't follow players. Like, if a player says something on social media that is worthwhile, usually it's going to be retweeted and brought to our attention. Like, I think following players is weird. But, like, I don't recall seeing a whole lot of Derek Stingley tweets where he's gassing up his teammates. I've never, like, and again, some players gas up their players, and, like, they just do that naturally. Dana Brown's the, you know, the huge example of that in the city of Houston. But I don't recall Will Anderson really doing that. So the fact that he has gotten those guys' attention so quickly is encouraging to me. Like, it moves my needle, sure. Like, it doesn't move it to, like, an 8 or a 9. I'm not ready to say Kamari Lassiter is going to be the rookie of the year. But it's like, dang, that guy's impressing his teammates that quickly. And, you know, videos, stride for stride, because his question about him was speed. It certainly has grabbed my attention. Pessimistic Chad tweeted, not in the know about Okuda, but the Texans grabbed him early in free agency. He's rarely mentioned. Is he not a viable third corner? So I find this, like, I'm willing to say that Kamari Lassiter is going to be a starter. Like, and maybe that's an overreaction based on Will Anderson, based on a Derek Stingley tweet, but they also drafted him in the second round. I think guys that you draft in the second round should be starters, and they also drafted him, you know, as a corner, and the Texans could use some help at corner outside of Derek Stingley. So I'm willing to already say that Kamari Lassiter is going to be a starter. I don't think the position battle, like we thought it was whenever they drafted Lassiter, was going to be Kamari Lassiter in one of the nickel corners, or Kamari Lassiter and Okuda and Henderson. I think the position battle is actually going to be the outside corners, Okuda and Henderson, versus the inside corners, the guy they got from the Patriots, and Desmond and Ward. Oh. Or King, yeah, King. So those are going to be like, that's going to be the battle. Okuda, Henderson versus King, and I can't remember the name, the guy that they got from New England.
Stevens?
And whoever wins that matchup is going to be the corner, and Lassiter is going to start wherever that guy's not. So say it's Okuda that wins it. Okay, well, Okuda is going to be your outside corner, and Lassiter is going to be your inside corner. Let's say that it's King that wins it. Well, King's going to be your nickel guy, and then Lassiter is going to play outside. So I don't think the position battle is Lassiter versus any of those guys. It's which guy looks better between the outside guys, the inside guys, and then Lassiter is going to start at the spot that's opposite of that guy that won the job.
Yeah, when we were talking about this previously, I thought that there was a chance that he might play outside because Caserio was just way too high on him, and he was way too defensive about anybody that was critical of him. And now when you hear it and you take it to this level, it makes you believe that the guys are really truly a good football player that can play outside corner. I hope that's the case, and I hope, because that'll really solidify the fact that there were questions when they drafted him, when there were other corners that might have been on the board. So it's going to be interesting to me, but if that's the guy that ends up being your other outside corner, I think it's a great problem to have in terms of filling the inside spot, and I think it upgrades your overall secondary, and it gives you hope that for the long term, these are your two corners now going forward that are going to be your guys, even if they're put on an island, however you choose to use them, and that's great for D'Amico's defense. So the biggest thing to take away is that if the players are the guys talking about him, because we know Nick will gas him up. We know D'Amico will gas him up. They've done this with guys in the past. I always go back to even the Kenyon Green situation.
I think they'll defend him, but they're not going to be like, oh, yeah, he's going to be the next great player. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of this middle where, like, they're not going to gas him up like he's going to be an all-pro. But at the same time, if you're knocking, like, their skill set or their speed in the case of Kamari Lassiter, there's going to be pushback there.
I think where, to me, it's different is the fact that they're going to make sure that they say the same kind of things like they said to Kenyon Green. He's given us full effort. He's been a warrior out there. He's done everything we've asked of him. He's done those kind of things. So they're going to give you those kind of general kind of pump-ups. But when you start getting specifics from players, you've got some video to back it up. We obviously know that the question mark was his speed, and we're already seeing him stay with guys. And again, it's in shorts and pads and helmets.
Yeah.
But he looks like he has more speed than maybe was previously advertised. Those are all really encouraging signs that there's an above-average chance, that he ends up in the starting lineup somewhere for this team, and I think it's going to be outside.
Miles Bryant's the nickel I'm talking about. Miles Bryant, Desmond King are going to fight for the nickel. Yeah, they're going to fight for the nickel job. The corner opposite of Stingley is going to be Henderson Okuda, and it's going to be those two. Like, it's going to be Henderson Okuda versus Bryant King. May the best man win. If whoever's the best man, then Lassiter is going to start the one spot that guy's not starting. Like, I'm willing to say that already. Maybe that's just an extreme overreaction for me. It isn't. 713-780-ESPN. Cody Davis, who's been he's been out there at Texans minicamp, veteran minicamp. He's had feet on the ground out there on Kirby. We'll talk to him when we come back. Cody Davis joins us when we return. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. There aren't many things that are more annoying than potholes, and this take it from somebody who gets annoyed by a lot, but potholes, boy, they're annoying. I know you know everything to fix these potholes that you have authority over, and I know nothing works. Well, finally, there's something you can do to change that. Mechanical concrete from Third Rock Renewables. Third Rock Renewables patented technology, mechanical concrete, is changing the game, fixing these annoying potholes for good. They're going to cut your maintenance costs by 75% while also lowering your carbon emissions. I know that sounds too good to be true, but it's not. It is true. Fix your parking lot, your road, your laydown yard, wherever you have a pothole, wherever you need asphalt. Third Rock Renewables mechanical concrete is for you. It's the only low-cost, industrial-strength, sustainable base that turns end-of-life tires into an indestructible build product. Call 713-305-0507. If you've had trouble with potholes, if you're using too much asphalt, you're throwing bad money into it, we'll fix it with mechanical concrete. 713-305-0507 to figure out how they can help you. Third Rock online as well at thirdrockrenewables.com, thirdrockrenewables.com.
ESPN 97.5.